Welcome, Deep Divers. Have you ever thought about those industries that are absolutely essential to our global economy, running silently in the background, yet rarely capturing the spotlight?
Yeah, they're kind of hidden sometimes.
Exactly. Today, we're pulling back the curtain on one of them, the fascinating, incredibly resilient, and actually surprisingly innovative world of publicly listed insurance brokers.
It's an industry often overlooked, I think, but critically important. These brokers are the expert navigators in a complex sea of risk.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, connecting everything from the largest multinational corporations right down to individual families with precisely the right coverage they need.
That's right. Our deep dive today is titled Publicly Listed Insurance Brokers, an Investment Analysis. We're going to peel back the layers and reveal the fundamental strengths of this sector.
And look at how things are changing, too.
Yes, uncover its evolving strategic imperatives and give you a clear framework for understanding what truly drives value in this, well, dynamic space.
Our mission, really, is to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge from a recent investment analysis we've been looking at.
Right.
We want to give you a comprehensive understanding of an industry that, despite its critical role, is often, underestimated.
Yeah, Phil.
You'll gain crucial insights into what makes these companies tick and what to look for as the future unfolds.
Let's get started then. We'll begin by exploring what makes this sector so fundamentally appealing, but also how the very ground beneath its feet is subtly yet profoundly shifting.
Okay.
What, in your view, makes these brokers such compelling businesses in the first place?
Well, what's truly insightful here, I think, is the foundational strength that comes from the sector structure. It operates as an oligopoly.
An oligopoly. So not many players dominate.
Exactly. This isn't a wide-open market with countless small players. Instead, you have a few large, established players commanding significant global market share.
Okay.
And this concentration tends to bring a remarkable level of stability and predictability.
Which investors like, obviously.
Right. And for an investor, the deeper implication isn't just stability, but that these giants, while maybe sometimes slow-moving,
Yeah, big ships turn slowly.
they can leverage their immense scale for strategic intelligence.
Ah, interesting. So scale enables innovation here.
It really does. This creates competitive moats that new entrants find almost impossible to cross quickly. It effectively redefines what disruption even looks like in this sector.
So it's a game of strategic positioning among these heavyweights where size actually allows for innovation rather than just stifling it. That's a crucial distinction.
It is.
And from a financial perspective, a standout characteristic is their high free cash flow conversion. Why is that such a powerful indicator for investors?
Oh, it's a huge positive. High free cash flow conversion basically means these businesses consistently generate a substantial amount of cash after covering their operating expenses and, necessary capital investments.
So cash left over.
Lots of it. And this isn't just a number on a page. It's the lifeblood of a flexible enterprise.
Right. What can they do with it?
Well, this robust cash flow can be efficiently reinvested back into the business for organic growth or channeled into strategic acquisitions.
Which we'll definitely talk more about.
Oh, yeah. Or it can be returned to shareholders through consistent dividends and share buybacks. It just signals a very healthy and financially flexible company that consistently creates value.
And that ties directly into another core strength, their capital-light business model. Unlike, say, a manufacturing company that needs enormous factories and heavy machinery.
Right, or a retailer needing vast amounts of inventory.
Exactly. Brokers operate very differently.
Precisely. Their model stands in stark contrast to many other industries that demand substantial capital outlays for property, plant, and equipment. Big physical stuff.
So what are their main assets then?
For an insurance broker, their primary assets aren't physical. They are their human capital, their expert advisors, their relationships, their proprietary data, and increasingly, their technology platforms.
People and data, basically.
Fundamentally, this inherently low capital expenditure significantly boosts their attractive financial profile, directly contributing to that high free cash flow conversion we just discussed.
Makes sense.
They don't have to sink huge amounts of cash into fixed assets,
Yeah.
which makes them very agile financially.
Okay, so when you combine that capital lightness with consistent cash generation, you get a business with remarkable inherent resilience. We've certainly seen our share of economic turbulence over the years,
We have.
but Insurance seems to remain a fundamental, almost non-negotiable need.
It absolutely is. Insurance is not a discretionary purchase for most businesses, and certainly not for individuals protecting their livelihoods or assets. You just have to have it.
It's foundational.
It's a fundamental risk management tool, woven right into the fabric of commerce and daily life. This makes brokers essential intermediaries, providing stability even in, challenging economic times.
And history backs that up.
Oh, yeah. Historically, the industry has demonstrated an impressive ability to weather various storms, often acting as a defensive sort of bedrock investment within many portfolios.
So those are the foundational strengths, solid stuff. But your analysis also points to shifting sands, suggesting that the old playbook for generating value is, well, evolving. What was the historical growth engine for these firms?
Yeah, things are changing. Historically, the primary imperative was what we often call the roll-up acquisition
The
strategy.
roll up, buying up the little guys.
Exactly. Growth was largely powered by relentlessly acquiring smaller, independent brokerage firms. It was a straightforward, almost industrial process by a smaller firm, integrate its operations,
Plug it in.
plug it in, expand your market share, geographic reach, and client base, and then move on to the next target. This approach worked incredibly well for decades in what was a very fragmented market.
That sounds like a classic consolidation strategy. But you're telling us a new mandate, a new strategic playbook is emerging. What does that future look like for the brokers who want to outperform?
The shift is indeed significant. Future outperformance increasingly depends on a broker's nuanced ability to navigate what's described as a bifurcated P&C market cycle.
Bifurcated. Okay, what does that mean exactly? Split.
Yeah, split in two. Think of it like the property and casualty market having two distinct currents running at the same time. On one side, we might see property insurance rates softening, maybe because there's ample capital around.
Prices coming down.
Right. While on the other side, casualty lines like general liability are still hardening prices going up, often due to rising claims costs.
So completely different dynamics in different parts of the market.
Exactly. And brokers must skillfully manage these contrasting trends, optimizing client outcomes, and by extension, their own commission revenues. It's no longer a one-size-fits-all approach to the market.
So it demands a much more precise, adaptable approach. And speaking of precision, leveraging technology and data analytics sounds less like an option and more like a critical survival tool now.
Oh, absolutely. It's no longer optional. It's a core competitive imperative. Technology and sophisticated data analytics are critical for enhancing operational efficiency, delivering superior client service, and crucially, gaining a competitive edge.
What kind of tech are we talking about?
Well, this encompasses everything from developing intuitive digital client platforms to employing artificial intelligence for real-time risk analysis. The digital arms race is very much on, and the winners will be those who harness these tools most effectively.
And this leads right into the third part of that new playbook, moving towards sophisticated advisory-led solutions. It's no longer just about placing a policy, is it?
No, not at all. It's about being an indispensable consultant.
Okay.
Exactly. The industry is rapidly moving beyond simple policy placement. Brokers are becoming strategic partners, offering in-depth advice on complex and emerging risks.
Like what kind of risks?
Think about challenges like cyber warfare, the accelerating impacts of climate change, or volatile geopolitical instability. These aren't simple risks to quantify or cover.
Much harder than insuring a building.
Much harder. And clients, especially large corporations, increasingly value a consultative approach where brokers help them understand, model, and mitigate these incredibly complex threats.
And that's good business for the brokers, too.
Definitely. This shift creates higher margin advisory revenue and truly elevates the broker from a transactional agent to an indispensable strategic partner.
That makes perfect sense. As the world becomes more intricate, so do the risks. Now let's turn our attention to the landscape itself. Who are the key players in this evolving market? We'll start with what the analysis terms the big four global giants.
Right. These are the titans of the industry. You've got Marsh & McLennan, often referred to as MMC,
MMC, got it.
Aon Plc,
Aon.
Arthur J. Gallagher & Co., or AJG,
AJG.
and Willis Towers Watson, WTW.
The big four.
Yeah. They are characterized by just unparalleled scale, extensive network effects, and comprehensive service offerings that span the globe.
How global are we talking?
Well, their vast operational footprint, with Marsh & McLennan, for example, operating in over 130 countries, allows them to serve multinational clients seamlessly, which is just an immense competitive advantage.
So their sheer size creates significant barriers to entry for newcomers, but their scale also presents a unique challenge, doesn't it? Like, how do you keep growing when you're already that big?
It does. It's a fascinating paradox, actually.
Yeah.
Their primary challenge is sustaining high single-digit organic growth.
Just growing the existing business, not through buying others.
Exactly. When you're already that immense with tens of billions in revenue, moving the needle with new business wins becomes a mathematical feat. It requires constant, significant innovation and aggressive market penetration just to maintain impressive growth percentages.
A high bar to clear. Beyond these global behemoths, your analysis identifies a dynamic group of mid-cap and specialty players. Who falls into this category?
Yeah, below the giants, there's a really active group. This includes names like Brown & Brown, ticker BRO.
BRO.
Ryan Specialty Holdings, Ryan.
Right.
And the Baldwin Insurance Group, BWIN.
BWIN, okay.
These firms are aggressively pursuing growth, often through a combination of strategic M&A, similar to that roll-up strategy we mentioned earlier, and through deep specialization in niche markets.
So maybe more focused than the giants.
Often, yes. They are carving out their own significant, often highly profitable positions by being perhaps more agile or hyper-focused than the big four.
And then we have the category labeled tech-enabled and distressed brokers. That sounds like a mixed bag of opportunities and risks.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
This category includes companies like Goosehead Insurance, GSHD,
GSHD,
Erie Indemnity,
Erie.
SelectQuote, SLQT, and eHealth. EH.
Okay, quite a few there.
Yeah, these firms often employ unique business models, perhaps leaning heavily on proprietary technology or focusing on very specific niches like personal lines insurance or the Medicare Advantage market.
But the distress part.
Right. Some, like SelectQuote and eHealth, have faced significant operational challenges. Things like high customer churn and intense regulatory scrutiny. That makes them higher risk, potentially high reward turnaround scenarios.
Got it. So that's the publicly traded universe. But the analysis also brings to light a powerful shadow competition, the outsized influence of private equity. These aren't publicly listed, yet they're massive players shaping the market.
That's a crucial point, absolutely. Key private players like Hub International, Accrager, and Alliant Insurance Services are significant privately held competitors.
Huge names, even if not traded.
Huge. They are often backed by substantial private equity capital. And their aggressive presence profoundly impacts the entire market dynamic, even for the publicly traded firms.
What competitive advantages do these private firms possess that make them so impactful compared to their public counterparts?
Well, what's truly insightful here is their structural freedom. They aren't beholden to the intense quarterly earnings scrutiny that public companies face.
No hitting the number every 90 days.
Exactly. This gives them greater flexibility in their capital structure. They often operate with higher leverage, more debt, and they can pursue longer investment horizons.
Thinking years, not quarters.
Right. They don't have to worry about immediate investor reactions to a dip in quarterly profit. This leeway allows them to make more aggressive, long-term strategic plays, especially in the M&A market, without the same public pressures.
And that aggressive M&A activity by private equity firms has a ripple effect on the entire sector, doesn't it, in terms of prices?
It certainly does. Their aggressive pursuit of a finite pool of attractive brokerage assets drives up valuation multiples across the entire sector.
How high are we talking?
The analysis notes that the average base purchase price for brokerages exceeded 11 times EBITDA for the first time in 2024.
11 times earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. That's significant.
It is. And for bigger platform deals, it can be over 14 times EBITDA. To put those multiples in perspective, 11 to 14 times EBITDA is a premium valuation. It tells you that buyers, especially private equity, are betting heavily on the consistent earnings power and future growth of these brokerages. They're paying significantly above their annual operating profits to acquire them.
And that puts pressure on the public, guys.
Huge pressure. It creates continuous pressure on public brokers to maintain stringent discipline in their capital allocation. They have to compete for deals, but answer to public shareholders about the price.
Let's touch on some recent market shakeups that really illustrate these trends. We've seen some truly transformative acquisitions, even among the giants.
Yeah, the consolidation continues at pace. The most impactful recent event is probably Arthur J. Gallagher's transformative acquisition of AssuredPartners.
AJG buying AssuredPartners, that was huge, right?
Massive. The deal closed in August 2025 for $13.45 billion. It dramatically solidifies AJG's position among the top global brokers. And it's just a prime example of this aggressive consolidation trend playing out in real time.
So the big players are still very much in growth mode via acquisition, but it's not all about acquisitions. We've also seen some IPO activity, indicating investor appetite for new listings.
Correct. There's still room for new entrants, it seems. The successful debut of specialty insurance marketplace Accelerant Holdings, ARX, in 2025, valued at $6.4 billion, clearly demonstrates that there's still significant investor interest in new, often specialized, insurance-related entities entering the public market. It shows that innovation and niche plays can attract substantial capital.
But not everyone has had smooth sailing. Challenges for smaller players seem to be a recurring theme, especially for those in more volatile niches, like we mentioned with SelectQuote.
Indeed. SelectQuote, for instance, received a notice of non-compliance with NYSE minimum stock price requirements in late 2022.
Stock price fell too low.
Right. Though it did regain compliance in March 2023. But this highlights the volatility and inherent risks associated with some of the smaller, tech-driven or niche models, particularly if they struggle with execution, customer acquisition costs, or just market acceptance.
And even the massive players make strategic administrative moves. Marsh & McLennan recently delisted from the London Stock Exchange. Why did they do that?
Yeah, in late 2023, MMC delisted its shares from the LSE. This was really a strategic move to consolidate trading on its primary listing, the New York Stock Exchange.
Just simplifying things.
Pretty much. They cited disproportionate costs and administrative burdens associated with maintaining a secondary listing. Just a practical decision for such a large global entity focused on streamlining operations.
Okay, so we've identified the players in the recent headlines, but what makes these companies so strong and resilient? What are their competitive moats that protect them from new entrants and persistent competition?
Well, let's reiterate that oligopolistic nature of the global market first. The concentration at the top creates significant barriers to entry for any aspiring new competitors.
Hard to break into that club.
It's incredibly difficult for a new, nascent firm to challenge the entrenched dominance of companies that have been built over decades, accumulating vast resources and expertise.
That makes perfect sense. It's hard to just walk in and compete with that kind of scale. And that leads us to one of the most critical sources of durable competitive advantage. Scale and network effects.
Right. What's truly fascinating here is how these truly global footprints translate into an unparalleled advantage. Take Marsh & McLennan again, operating in over 130 countries.
That global reach.
It enables them to seamlessly serve multinational clients with complex needs across numerous jurisdictions. And crucially, each new client or office they add actually increases the value of the entire platform for all users.
Ah, the network effect. Like a social network, but for insurance.
Exactly. It creates a powerful network effect that's incredibly difficult, almost impossible, for smaller competitors to replicate. It deepens their value proposition exponentially.
It's like the more clients they serve, the more valuable they become to every client. And intrinsically tied to that is the immense power of data and analytics. These firms have been collecting data for decades, right? This must be a gold mine.
Absolutely. Decades of accumulated proprietary data on placements, pricing, and claims are not just records. They are an increasingly valuable strategic asset.
So what are they doing with it?
Leading firms are investing heavily to harness this data. Aon, for instance, leverages proprietary modeling tools like Taish and Rometrica.
Catchy names.
While Marsh & McLennan has its AI-powered Centrisca platform. These tools allow them to create highly sophisticated risk models, benchmark client programs against industry peers.
See how you stack up.
Exactly. And offer advanced advisory services that extend far beyond simple policy placement. This data-driven approach enhances their value proposition, makes their services stickier, and gives them a predictive edge.
So it's not just about what has happened, but predicting what could happen and helping clients prepare. Another powerful moat is specialization and expertise. This is where a deep dive into niche industries really pays off.
Precisely. Deep specialized knowledge in specific niche industries, think aviation, marine, energy, construction, or in highly complex product lines like cyber or directors and officers liability, D&O.
Complex stuff.
Very complex. This creates incredibly high switching costs for clients. If you're managing highly specific, nuanced risks, you're far less likely to jump ship to another broker just for a marginal price difference.
You stick with the expert.
You do. Ryan Specialty, for instance, has built its entire business model on this principle, focusing exclusively on complex risks within the excess and surplus, or E&S, market. That's where standard insurers often won't tread.
The hard-to-place risks.
Exactly.
And finally, it all comes back to relationships. Despite all the technology and data, insurance brokerage is fundamentally a relationship-based business, isn't it?
It absolutely is, at its core. The broker's role is a trusted advisor, particularly for large corporations navigating multifaceted and often existential risks, fosters deep, long-term, entrenched relationships.
It's not just a transaction.
No, these are not merely transactional interactions. They're partnerships built on years of trust, deep understanding, and proven expertise. It's that human element, the bespoke advice and personal touch that remains vitally important, even with all the advancements in technology.
Okay, let's think about the relentless engine of consolidation. Mergers and acquisitions aren't just a trend here. They're a defining characteristic and almost intrinsic force within the industry.
You're right. It's constant. The market below the very top tier remains remarkably fragmented. There are still lots of smaller players.
So plenty of targets.
Exactly. Creating incredibly fertile ground for acquisitions. In 2024, the U.S. market alone saw 849 announced M&A transactions.
Wow, 849 deals in 1 year.
Yeah, making it the third most active year on record. This relentless pace is driven by clear financial and strategic benefits that come with achieving greater scale.
Like what?
Things like increased buying power with insurance carriers, offering a broader spectrum of services, and crucial operational efficiencies that boost profitability. Bigger is often better in this game.
And we touched on this earlier, but private equity is truly the primary driver of this consolidation. They're pouring capital into this space.
Dominant indeed.
Mm-hmm.
In 2024, private capital-backed buyers were responsible for a staggering 70% of all announced U.S. transactions.
70%? That's huge.
It's a significant leap from 59.3% just back in 2019. Private equity firms are drawn to this model because of its incredibly attractive financial characteristics. High levels of recurring revenue, robust free cash flow conversion, and remarkably low capital expenditure requirements.
All the things we talked about earlier.
Exactly. These qualities make brokerages ideal targets for leveraged buyouts, where private equity can use borrowed money to amplify returns.
And all that demand from private equity really impacts valuations across the board, making it tougher for even the big public brokers to acquire without, you know, overpaying.
It certainly does. The intense competition for a limited supply of high-quality brokerage firms has kept acquisition multiples significantly elevated.
Those 11x, 14 EBITDA numbers.
Right. As we noted, the average base purchase price for brokerages surpassed 11 times EBITDA for the first time in 2024, with larger platform deals commanding over 14 times. This creates a challenging environment for publicly traded companies trying to make accretive acquisitions, ones that actually add to earnings per share without overpaying. It demands immense discipline.
So M&A isn't just an offensive strategy to grow, it's also a defensive necessity. This is what the analysis calls the treadmill effect. Can you explain that?
Yeah, this is a really critical insight, I think. It truly illustrates the high stakes. The consistently high volume and rich valuations in brokerage M&A suggest that this activity is not purely an offensive growth strategy.
It's not just about getting bigger.
No, it's also a critical defensive maneuver. Think about it. If a publicly traded consolidator like Arthur J. Gallagher or Brown & Brown were to just pause its acquisition activity.
Take a break from buying.
Yeah. It would risk ceding valuable ground. Aggressive PE-backed firms would continue to snap up smaller competitors, eroding the public firm's potential deal pipeline and gradually diminishing its market share and its relevance to insurance carriers.
So they have to keep acquiring just to maintain their position. They can't stop running on the treadmill.
Exactly. This dynamic creates that treadmill effect, compelling public brokers to continuously acquire simply to defend their competitive position and prevent erosion.
That sounds exhausting.
It puts them in a tricky spot. It makes their performance highly dependent on the continuous availability of suitable acquisition targets at reasonable prices, and crucially, consistent access to affordable capital, both debt and equity.
So what's the vulnerability there?
A significant rise in interest rates or a contraction in the credit markets could disproportionately harm the brokers most reliant on this M&A-driven model. It exposes a key vulnerability in an otherwise resilient business. It's a strategic tightrope walk.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure to be under. Let's shift gears now and look at the operating environment. What can we expect from, say, 2024 to 2026? The analysis highlights that bifurcated P&C insurance cycle again. Can you elaborate on what that truly means for market conditions?
Right. This is one of the most significant factors for the next few years. The defining characteristic of the property and casualty market for this period is that it's not moving in a single unified direction.
Not all up or all down.
Exactly. No. We're seeing two distinct trends simultaneously pulling in different directions, making navigation particularly complex for brokers.
Okay, so let's break that down. First side, is the property market generally softening, prices coming down?
Yes, the commercial property insurance market is experiencing a notable softening trend. This shift is primarily driven by a significant influx of capital into the sector, which increases underwriting capacity.
More supply of insurance.
Right. And until the first half of 2025, anyway, a period of relatively moderate catastrophe losses helped too. As a result, capacity has expanded and competition among insurers has intensified, leading to flat or even declining rates.
Do we have numbers on that?
Yeah, data from the Swiss Re Institute shows that U.S. aggregate commercial insurance prices actually fell in the first quarter of 2025 for the first time since 2018.
First time in years.
Yeah, led by a 9% decline in property pricing specifically. This presents a headwind for organic revenue growth for brokers with high property exposure.
Meaning it's harder to grow that part of their business because the underlying prices are lower.
Precisely.
So property is getting cheaper, but the other side of the coin, the casualty market, is the different story, right? It's still getting more expensive.
In stark contrast to property, yes. Casualty lines, things like commercial auto, general liability, and umbrella excess liability, continue to experience hard market conditions. Prices are going up.
And why is that?
This is fueled by the persistent and increasingly impactful issue of social inflation.
Social inflation, that sounds ominous. What is it?
It's not about the price of goods, like normal inflation. Social inflation refers to the rising costs of insurance claims stemming from trends in the legal system. We're talking about bigger jury awards, more lawsuits being filed, and broader interpretations of corporate liability by courts.
So lawsuits are getting more expensive for insurers.
Essentially, yes. The legal system is making claims more expensive, pushing up premiums significantly. In the first quarter of 2025, casualty prices, excluding workers' compensation, were up 12%.
12% increase. That's substantial.
It is. And this provides a tailwind for commission revenues for brokers because the premiums are going up.
Higher premiums, higher commissions.
Generally, yes. But it also makes client relationships challenging when their costs are constantly rising. It's a tough conversation.
I bet. So skillfully navigating this dual market environment, managing client expectations and hardening casualty lines while finding growth opportunities despite softening property rates will clearly be a key determinant of financial outperformance through 2026.
Absolutely. That's a key differentiator.
Beyond the P&C cycle itself, what about broader macroeconomic factors? Interest rates have been a huge topic lately. How do they impact brokers?
Yeah, interest rates present a mixed bag, really. Both opportunities and challenges. The higher interest rate environment of 2023-2024 was actually a net benefit for many brokers.
How so?
Well, they earned substantial investment income on funds held in a fiduciary capacity. Think of it like this. When you pay your insurance premium, the broker holds that money for a short period before passing it on to the actual insurance company.
They get to hold the cash for a bit. The float.
Exactly, the float. During that time, they can invest those funds and earn interest. This creates additional income for them, which is a significant tailwind in a high interest rate environment.
But there's a downside to higher rates, too.
Yes. The trade-off is that higher rates also increase the cost of debt. And that's critical for those highly acquisitive brokers relying on leverage, on borrowing money, to fund their deals.
Makes M&A more expensive.
Right. So a future shift to a lower interest rate environment would reverse these effects. Less income from the float, but cheaper borrowing costs for M&A.
And inflation. We hear so much about consumer inflation, but how does it specifically impact the insurance industry beyond that social inflation you mentioned?
Well, while headline consumer price inflation has shown signs of moderating, specific inflationary pressures highly relevant to insurance persist. As we discussed, social inflation continues to drive up costs in the legal system, fueling that hard casualty market.
Okay.
But beyond that, think about elevated costs for crucial components like auto parts, or the persistent shortage and higher wages for construction labor. These continue to impact claim severity.
Meaning the cost to fix or replace things is higher.
Exactly. When a claim occurs, the cost to repair a car or rebuild a property is significantly higher, putting upward pressure on insurers and, by extension, on the premiums clients pay.
And finally, general economic growth. How does the broader economic context tie into brokerage revenues? Is it pretty direct?
It's quite closely correlated, yes. Brokerage revenues generally move with overall economic activity. A growing economy usually leads to higher client payrolls, increased revenues for businesses, and rising property values.
And those are the things being insured.
Precisely. Those are the fundamental exposure units
upon
which insurance premiums are based. So logically, a potential economic slowdown or contraction would naturally act as a headwind. It would temper organic growth rates across the sector as the underlying economic activity that drives premium volume diminishes.
Okay, let's talk about the new frontiers. Technology, regulation, and ESG. The digital arms race is undeniably on, isn't it? It feels like every industry is racing on tech.
Absolutely. It's front and center here, too. Technology investment has fundamentally shifted from being, you know, just a line item in the budget to a core strategic imperative.
Table stakes now.
Pretty much. Leading brokers are engaged in a full-blown digital arms race, developing incredibly sophisticated platforms to enhance efficiency, deliver superior client value, and also attract top talent.
Can you give some specific examples?
Sure. Marcia McLennan, for instance, has developed proprietary AI-powered platforms like Centrisk for highly granular supply chain risk analysis.
AI for supply chains. Makes sense.
And they have an internal generative AI tool, LeanAI, designed to improve colleague productivity and service delivery across its global operations. These are significant investments to gain an edge.
Aon is also heavily invested in this, right? They've been quite vocal about their tech strategy.
Yes, Aon has established a dedicated strategy and technology group and leverages a suite of proprietary modeling tools like Teich and Remetrica.
More cool names.
Yeah, they use these to provide clients with incredibly sophisticated data-driven insights on risk and capital allocation. Similarly, Willis Towers Watson, WTW, is heavily focused on the digitalization of the entire insurance value chain.
Right.
Through its Horizons Innovation Program and client-facing software solutions like Risk Agility and Radar. The goal for all these players is to make everything smarter, faster, and more integrated, creating both efficiency and deeper client value.
So it's about making everything smarter, faster, and more integrated. What about regulatory scrutiny? Is that increasing as the sector consolidates and these players get even bigger?
The industry operates under perpetual regulatory scrutiny, and certainly intensifying in some areas. The immense scale of the largest brokers, particularly after significant acquisitions like AJG's, raises the potential for antitrust concerns regarding future mega mergers.
Regulators getting worried about too much concentration.
Potentially, down the line. Regulators are also maintaining a persistent focus on broker compensation models, how they get paid.
Oh, transparency on fees and commissions.
Exactly. Demanding greater transparency in how brokers are paid by both clients and, crucially, by insurance carriers through contingent commissions and other arrangements. This can impact revenue streams and competitive dynamics.
And ESG, environmental, social, and governance, that's a huge area of focus for many industries. Insurance, by its very nature, must be at the forefront of understanding risk in this evolving landscape.
It's becoming absolutely central to the broker's role, and frankly, a significant growth driver for them. ESG considerations, particularly climate risk, are now paramount.
How does that translate into business for brokers?
Well, clients increasingly require assistance in modeling and mitigating the physical risks associated with climate change. Think wildfires, floods, severe storms, which are clearly growing in frequency and severity.
Modeling those complex risks.
Right. And they also need help navigating the financial and strategic risks of transitioning to a low-carbon economy. What does that mean for their business, their investments?
So it's both a challenge and an opportunity.
Exactly. This dual challenge represents both a significant compliance burden for clients, but also, importantly, a major new source of high-margin advisory revenue for brokers for the foreseeable future. Helping clients navigate ESG is big business.
This is where it gets really interesting as we bring it all together. Now that we've charted the complex currents of the operating environment and identified the competitive moats, let's look at the vessels themselves. Who are these players navigating these shifting seas, and how are their individual strategies setting them apart or holding them back?
Well, let's dive into the companies.
We'll categorize them by typical investment objectives, giving you, the listener, a framework for understanding which companies might align with your specific goals.
Indeed. We'll group them based on their fundamental appeal and unique profiles, looking at their relative strengths and strategic focus. This helps us understand not just what they do, but how well they're positioned for the future.
Okay, let's start with the stability and capital return category. These are companies that typically offer steady earnings and consistent shareholder returns. Who are the prime examples here, and what makes them attractive for this objective?
Right. For investors seeking stable earnings, consistent dividend growth, and maybe broad market exposure, Marsh & McLennan, MMC, Aon, AON, and perhaps Erie Indemnity, ERE, are particularly appealing.
Let's start with MMC, the biggest.
Right. Marsh & McLennan, the undisputed global leader. They offer just unparalleled scale and diversification across its two main segments. Risk and insurance services, that's the Marsh Broker and Guy Carpenter, reinsurer, and consulting, which is Mercer and Oliver Wyman.
So not just insurance brokerage.
No, significant consulting too. Their sheer global network, deep client integration, and those proprietary data analytics tools we mentioned create a formidable competitive moat. They consistently generate strong free cash flow.
That cash machine again?
Yeah, which reliably supports capital returns, dividends, buybacks, and strategic, though often very large, acquisitions, like their McGriff deal in 2024 for $7.75 billion.
What's the downside or risk for MMC?
Well, their sheer size can make achieving really high organic growth a challenge, as we discussed. And the consulting segment can be sensitive to macroeconomic downturns. Plus, there's always pressure to keep innovating at that scale.
Okay, how about Aon? Another giant.
Aon Pissek is another titan, known for its Aon United strategy, focusing on integrated risk capital and human capital solutions, trying to bring everything together for the client.
What are they known for financially?
They're renowned for strong free cash flow and a very disciplined capital allocation policy. Historically, they've favored aggressive share repurchases, which boosts earnings per share.
And they made a big acquisition recently too, right? NFP.
Yes. Their recent acquisition of NFP for $13.4 billion significantly expands their presence in the important middle market segment. Aon thrives on leveraging data and analytics to provide differentiated insights.
What are the risks or challenges for Aon?
Well, integrating that huge NFP acquisition smoothly is a major task. That's certainly a risk. Consistently driving organic growth from such a massive base is always a challenge, and making that Aon United cross-selling strategy really fire on all cylinders is key.
Okay, and Erie Indemnity. You mentioned them for stability too, but they sound different.
Erie Indemnity, Erie, stands out with a truly unique, highly stable business model. It acts as the attorney, in fact, for the Erie Insurance Exchange, which is a reciprocal insurer owned by policyholders.
So Erie manages the exchange?
Essentially, yes. It performs policy services, underwriting, issuing policies, collecting premiums for a management fee, which is just a percentage of the premiums written by the exchange.
Ah, so very predictable revenue.
Extremely predictable. This structure generates a recurring stream of high-margin revenue, leading to a long history of profitability, operational stability, and very consistent dividend payments. Their exceptionally high return on equity, averaging 27% over the last 5 years, really underscores this stability.
What's the catch with Erie?
The primary risk is its complete dependence on the Erie Insurance Exchange. Any adverse developments at the exchange directly affect Erie Indemnity, and its growth is limited to the exchange's geographic footprint, which is only 12 states plus DC, and the products the exchange offers.
So very stable, but maybe limited upside compared to the global players.
That's a fair assessment.
Okay, that gives a clear picture for stability. Next, for those investors eyeing M&A-driven growth, which companies are leading the charge through strategic consolidation, the ones really running on that treadmill?
Right. Investors with perhaps a higher risk tolerance who are focused on growth through strategic consolidation will likely be drawn to the sector's most prolific and proven acquirers, Arthur J. Gallagher, AJG, and Brown & Brown, BRO.
Let's talk AJG first. We mentioned their big Assured Partners deal.
Yes. Arthur J. Gallagher, AJG, has arguably the best-in-class M&A platform with a long and successful track record. That transformative acquisition of Assured Partners for $13.45 billion dramatically increases their scale and capabilities, solidifying their position as a top-tier global broker.
What else drives AJG besides M&A?
They cultivate a strong, sales-driven corporate culture and focus strategically on specialized niche practice groups, which consistently drive solid organic growth alongside their acquisitions. The insight here is that their relentless, disciplined M&A, even with mega deals, is a proven engine for value creation.
What are the risks for AJG integrating that massive deal?
Absolutely. Immense integration risk with Assured Partners is number one. That deal also increased their financial leverage, their debt load. They often trade at high valuation expectations because of their track record, and obviously they have that M&A dependency. Oh, and they have faced some regulatory scrutiny regarding advice on microcaptive insurance programs.
Okay. Now, Brown & Brown, BRO, also big on M&A, but maybe a different style.
Yes, Brown & Brown exemplifies a highly disciplined and uniquely decentralized operating model, also with a long and successful M&A history. Their strategic focus is more on smaller tuck-in acquisitions.
Smaller deals, more of them.
Exactly. It's arguably less risky and more repeatable than the mega deals pursued by some competitors. They acquired 32 firms in 2024 alone.
32 firms in 1 year.
Yeah. The insight here is that while tuck-in acquisitions might seem less glamorous than mega deals, Brown & Brown has proven that consistent, disciplined, smaller M&A can lead to superior long-term returns by building a cohesive culture and minimizing integration headaches.
What else defines BRO?
Their strong corporate culture, really empowering local leaders with autonomy, and consistent operational execution have delivered superior long-term returns. They have a track record of 31 consecutive years of dividend increases.
Impressive. What are the main challenges for Brown & Brown?
Their primary challenge is probably the intense private equity competition for those smaller acquisition targets. And maintaining their unique decentralized culture as they continue to grow is also key.
It's fascinating how different M&A strategies can drive success. Moving on, for investors seeking high growth and disruption, who are the innovators in this space that might command premium valuations?
Right. Investors seeking exposure to potentially hypergrowth and disruptive business models who are comfortable with those premium valuations may look to innovators like Goosehead Insurance, GSHD, and Ryan Specialty Holdings, Ryan.
Goosehead, GSHD, what's their disruptive angle?
Goosehead Insurance is a disruptive personal lines insurance agency, so home and auto primarily. They have a unique and highly scalable franchise model.
How does the franchise model work?
Their key strategic differentiator is the separation of sales and service functions. Agents and franchisees focus exclusively on generating new business, selling policies, while a centralized corporate team handles all the client servicing and renewals.
So agents just sell.
Pretty much. The model aims to drive high agent productivity and impressive client retention rates, which they reported at 84% in 2024. It's a compelling high growth story.
What's the catch with Goosehead? Valuation.
Exactly. It consistently trades at a significant valuation premium, creating very lofty expectations for sustained, rapid growth. Any slowdown in key metrics could lead to a sharp correction in the stock price. They're also highly dependent on attracting and retaining franchisees and concentrated in personal lines.
Okay. And Ryan's Specialty, Ryan, you mentioned them earlier, focusing on E&S.
Yes, Ryan Specialty Holdings is a pure-play specialty insurance intermediary. They operate exclusively in the high-growth wholesale, binding authority, and underwriting management segments, basically the non-standard market.
And they benefit from that flight to specialty.
Precisely. Their business model capitalizes on that long-term trend, where increasingly complex risks like advanced cyber liability or severe weather events migrate from the standard insurance market to the more flexible excess and surplus, or E&S, market.
How are they performing?
They've demonstrated strong organic growth, capitalizing on fragmented niches. They had 15% organic growth in 2023, which is very strong, though it moderated to 7.1% in Q2 2025.
What are the risks for Ryan Specialty?
Their fortunes are highly correlated with the health and cyclicality of that E&S market. If the overall P&C market softens significantly, the flow of business into E&S could slow down, and competition in the specialty sector itself is increasing.
Okay. And for those with a very high risk appetite, perhaps looking for turnaround potential, which companies are in that challenging but potentially rewarding category?
Right. This is definitely higher risk. Investors with a very high tolerance for risk and maybe a focus on deep value might consider the distressed direct-to-consumer digital brokers, SelectQuote, SLQT, and eHealth, EDH.
We mentioned them earlier. What's their shared story?
Both companies primarily focused on the lucrative Medicare Advantage market, selling policies directly to consumers online or over the phone. They experienced rapid growth initially, followed by severe business model challenges.
What went wrong?
Mainly high customer churn people not sticking with the policies and negative revisions to the lifetime value of their policies, which led to significant accounting write-downs and losses.
So what's the investment case now? Turnaround.
Exactly. Both SelectQuote and eHealth are in the midst of multi-year turnaround efforts. They're focused on improving agent quality, prioritizing customer retention over just sheer volume, and achieving sustainable profitability. The investment case for both is a high-risk, high-reward turnaround scenario.
What are the big hurdles?
Success is contingent on their ability to stabilize operations and navigate intense regulatory scrutiny of third-party Medicare marketing practices, which is a major headwind from CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. There's significant execution risk. SelectQuote specifically also faces a securities class action lawsuit and a Department of Justice intervention regarding alleged illegal kickbacks. So, lots of challenges.
High risk indeed. Finally, for a more balanced approach, perhaps, balanced growth and value in a turnaround scenario, is there a company that fits that description? Somewhere between stability and high risk.
Yes. Willis Towers Watson, or WTW, offers a potentially unique combination here.
They were one of the big four. What's their story now?
Following the collapse of its proposed merger with Aon back in 2021, a deal blocked by regulators, WTW, has refocused internally. They're focused on simplification, portfolio optimization, evidenced by the sale of its TransAsset business, which was similar to Quoty Health and margin improvement.
So a turnaround story within the big four.
Exactly. It's a compelling turnaround story. If they successfully execute their transformation program, it could lead to significant operating leverage and potentially a re-rating of its valuation, which has lagged its big four peers since the failed merger.
What are their strengths?
They still have global scale, deep expertise, and they are aggressively investing in innovation through their Horizons program and tech like Risk Agility and Radar. So there's potential upside.
What are the risks for WTW?
The main risks are execution risk on that transformation program, navigating the lingering disruption and potential talent attrition from the failed Aon merger, and just rebuilding business momentum against fierce competition.
What an incredible deep dive. We've peeled back the layers on the publicly listed insurance brokerage sector, a truly fascinating industry that blends enduring resilience with constant strategic evolution.
Yeah, driven by that relentless M&A, technological innovation, and those shifting market cycles we talked about.
It truly is a dynamic landscape, absolutely essential to the global economy.
It really is. And understanding these fundamental forces, the oligopoly, the cash flow, the M&A treadmill, the bifurcated cycle, and the distinct strategic profiles of the key players provides a powerful framework for making sense of it all.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? As the global risk landscape continues its rapid, unpredictable evolution, how will the balance between massive scale, like MMC or Aon, and nimble specialization, like Ryan Specialty, ultimately determine the future leaders in navigating this ever-complex environment?
That's the key question. And what unexpected technology or regulatory shift could suddenly redefine the very competitive moats we've discussed today? Could AI truly disrupt the relationship model? Could regulations change the M&A game?
And which type of broker, the giant, the focus specialist, the tech disruptor, the steady hand is best positioned to adapt and thrive in whatever comes next? Keep thinking about it.